If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team. That makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
Well, hello everyone. Where have you been? Way and I just warmed up with a cool 30 minutes of news, discussion, talking about WWE versus AEW, a frequent topic on all wrestling platforms. We also went through all the latest as it pertains to the fallout of Double or Nothing, a recap of Battleground from Sunday night, Best of the Super Juniors, and the Muhammad Hassan interview that we have up on the site now over at postwrestling.com in advance of the season finale of Dark Side of the Ring. I would say overall, this has been a season that seems to have been met with definitely more praise than critique. I would say most of the episodes seem to have hit, and I think they hit their high point last week with the Daphne one that was just so well done, and I've only heard positive feedback to that show, which could have gone many ways, and I think they handled it really, really well last week.
Yeah, six seasons deep and still finding interesting stories to talk about and very, very, I would say relevant discussion coming off of all of these podcast episodes as well. So I think it says something about maybe the quality of the research and the documentary, I guess, production values of this team. Of course, John, you have a role in the episode tomorrow. So you have not seen the episode yet? Right.
I have not. No, I have had no time. This weekend was not a weekend where I could find any extra time. I will. I'm going to hopefully watch it by Wednesday night when we talk.
So we'll get your thoughts on maybe how the episode was, but also how maybe you felt your interview was edited into the show.
Yes. We have a lot to discuss from tonight's Raw coming out of Saturday night's main event on Saturday. This was their final night at the Yuengling Center that they had set up through the Tampa Bay Sports Commission. And this follows Saturday night's main event and Battleground, with WrestleTix reporting 9,760 tickets distributed that they did call a sellout on the broadcast. And first out are Rollins, Breaker, Bronson Reed, and Paul Heyman. And for someone that has to take these notes every single week, once you have four people coming out together, you need a team name. I do not need to be typing these names for all of these segments, like anything. Like, I don't care how lame the name is. If they are the Visionaries or whatever, they need a name, or I'm going to assign them a name, and it won't be flattering.
I would agree. I think we're pretty much on the brink of it. In fact, I would have assumed that tonight might have been us actually getting the name. But they do have the matching outfits. They've got the sunglasses. That at least is the first step.
Yeah, maybe Brains and Bronze.
That's not bad. No, it's pretty awful, but not bad.
Heyman calls Braun an attack dog, a badass, and the key to the future, the man that will main event WrestleMania 45, 46, 47, and so on and so on. I wonder what locations those WrestleManias will take place in. That could be all in Las Vegas.
And Saudi, I guess.
They start chanting for CM Punk. Heyman informs them that CM Punk is not here, which was code for he was there. And he states that WWE was scared to put Bronson in the ring with top-tier talent, which I could have sworn they put him in the ring with Seth Rollins. Did they not?
Well, he took that upon himself, Heyman said.
Right. Okay. They weren't booking him in high-profile enough matches, so he took control by murdering Seth Rollins.
Which was the story at the time. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And because of this, Rollins decided this guy would be a great asset to my group. So
sure.
That's their explanation.
Out. Sure.
Yeah. Why not? He then states that Bronson did worse damage to Seth Rollins than Reigns or Punk ever could. And now you must acknowledge Seth Rollins. And the crowd is chanting F you Rollins, and they had to try and censor this, which is always just a catastrophe to try and do. And then they blame Punk and Zayn for not... Rollins blames Punk and Zayn for not being champion right now, looks up at the briefcase, which he is going to qualify for, win the briefcase, and cash in on whoever he wants, whenever he wants, however he wants to do it. And that concluded our segment. So, yes, matching suits and still searching for a name.
Yeah, yeah. I guess maybe just even searching for an identity period, and when maybe your bad guys, the default is to put on the all black suits and put on the sunglasses.
Yeah.
I'll say maybe like if this is the complete group, and this is week one, the look is certainly a little bit generic right now, and but we give them a pass because maybe they're still trying to work things out. You know, I'm sure after this they're just going to a Zoom meeting and just trying to come up with a great name for their own stable. So I like a bit of a reset for the stable, you know, especially with the addition of a new member. I think Heyman did a great job of just telling us the story of Bronson Reed and why he was chosen to be a part of this group. I also like Rollins aiming for the Money in the Bank. I think everybody who is an active competitor in that level should be gunning for a Money in the Bank, because like with the Rumble, like with the Chamber, they've been able to make great use of these sort of like month-long title opportunity events to further each person's individual story. And we got to see that tonight.
First matchup is a Money in the Bank qualifier with Penta, Dragon Lee, and Chad Gable. And Il Del Vikingo is showing on the screen. We should just talk about this now. Later, they are running through the Worlds Collide matches that have been announced, and we get to the graphic where it is listed El Hijo del Vikingo against Chad Gable, as was announced over the weekend, for the AAA Mega Championship. So I want to be the first to congratulate our new champion, El Hijo del Vikingo, a week before he is to challenge the man that will not be named on WWE programming, Alberto El Patron, for this mega championship.
They're just very confident in this man's ability to beat Del Rio, and I think they should be. I think this has to have been a mistake, because last night, or whenever they first showed the graphic, it did not state that it was for the AAA championship. So somebody might have screwed up, but I also don't think anybody's too upset about it, because at this point, I don't see Del Rio having any sort of attachment to Worlds Collide. He's not on the poster. Let me see here. So, and I think they're very aware of maybe the stench that is on that man.
So let's get into this match. Early on, Penta and Dragon Lee worked together to send Chad Gable out. And a couple minutes into the match, Penta lifts up Dragon Lee for like a gory special, and then goes to lift up Jay for a simultaneous package pile driver. And this is a move that Penta has used in the past and has pulled it off. In this one, like whether it was him just like losing his footing, he lost control of Gable, who comes down. Like imagine like this package pile driver, but instead Chad just comes straight down and his head just bends as it comes down on the mat. This was frightening. I thought this, you've got Michael Cole reacting to this, saying he might have just broken his nose. I'm like, dude, he might have just broken his goddamn neck. How this guy did not is a miracle, because the way he came down with all of his weight just contracting the neck on top of it, this was a miracle that he appeared, and I use that word appeared, to be okay. And his night would not be over, but this was just a really, really scary moment.
So remind me, what is this spot supposed to be? What is Gable supposed to be going for?
It's supposed to be Gable is tucked into him for a package pile driver,
okay,
and it's just Penta sitting down,
yeah.
And it's like he has done this in the past, and it's been fine.
So did Gable take it wrong? Like,
watch this, and yeah. It should be Penta. Like, first of all, again, I'm not your expert here, but as like a talent, but it would appear like he should have Chad like tucked in between and secure, so that he's going to come down and Penta's pretty much going to take all of this on his ass, like taking this, like it's just him sitting down protecting Gable's head while the other guy is Dragon Lee is just, he's just coming down on his knees basically. And not even that, like it should be Penta is hitting first. And it looks like he sat back here, and Gable also is not tucking his chin here. Instead, it's almost like he's going down like you would almost like a Styles Clash. Like, that's what it kind of looks like here.
Yeah, I just don't know what the hell they were attempting and what was miscommunicated here, because I just don't know how this, if it's supposed to have looked something like this, I don't know how that this was supposed to turn out well at all. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you've seen the move elsewhere, like you would see, like it looks like a pretty routine spot. As I'm actually going to try and send this to Wei so he can actually see it. Sorry, this is not the best.
No, it's okay.
Audio, but at least you can have a visual here. Of him pulling this off. But
Oh, okay, I got it.
Gable was exceptionally lucky.
Oh my God, yeah, this was. I wonder if something like this would give them pause about, I don't know, just attempting.
They've always been very conservative on like pile drivers and stuff like this. Like even like they don't typically do the package pile driver. Like that's why it was such a big deal when they had Kevin Owens actually do it for the angle with Randy and with Cody. It's like they basically don't do package pile drivers. Like they usually just rotating them over onto the back.
So we're watching a GIF from PWG when Penta has done the move, and it's just supposed to be a package pile driver, like a Penta driver.
Yeah, famous, that's like it.
What
that's
Kevin
it.
Steen. But the difference in this case was that Gable had his legs hooked up over Penta's head for some reason and not low enough for Penta to hook his legs.
It's basically like he was up, like he was about to take a Styles Clash.
It seemed
like his body position.
I almost wonder if it was Gable that thought he was going for something else and just kind of seemed to take it wrong vertically rather than like wrapped up. And Penta, I guess in that position, maybe choosing to commit to the move anyway, and it just turned into a fucking mess. So Gable is extremely, extremely lucky.
And didn't have a broken nose, so Michael Cole could rest easy.
Mm-hmm.
The Kingo just like transitions and hits a Tope Con Hero. I could not believe that Gable, he immediately rolled to the floor, but then he's up.
You mean Penta?
Penta hits the Tope Con Hero.
Not the Kingo.
Oh, sorry. I meant Penta. Yes. Gable rolls to the floor because, yeah, my notes here. Vikingo then gets up from his seat. But yeah, Gable just gets right back into this. He catches Penta off the dive, and he just continues in this match to his detriment at a certain point. So Vikingo gets up from his seat in the front row. He's trading words with Gable. And then Dragon Lee hits this incredible Tope Suicida flying through the over the desk at like a million miles an hour, which is not what this match needed at this point. I was just like, please get these guys to the ending of this match because someone is going to kill themselves. Dragon Lee returns, hits a Poison Rana to Penta, and then a Liger Bomb on Gable for a two count. And the crowd is getting into this. Gable lifts up Lee for this big belly-to-belly. And as he climbs up the corner, Vikingo jumps the barricade, gets onto the apron, and leaps up to kick Gable right in the face. And suddenly, Chad Gable is realizing they've brought back Brawl for All and just not told me about it. Because this guy gets busted open from this kick, and then takes a double stomp from Lee, and it's a Penta driver onto Gable as Penta pins Chad Gable in 10 minutes and 3 seconds. I no longer want to see this guy have to do double duty at Worlds Collide. By all means, let's just keep this guy in one piece for that show and put him in one match. I mean, Chad Gable just got, and this guy's night was not even over. He still had to do the, did you see the AJ angle, or was that during the commercial?
Okay. I actually watched the commercials.
Okay. I think it was a commercial spot, but yeah, he had to do an angle with AJ as well that was physical on top of this. So this was a rough night for Chad Gable.
Well, there is a lot being based around Chad Gable, especially in promotion of this Worlds Collide event in which he will be going for the AAA Mega Championship in the main event. So he's doing
and
a lot of
and he is the biggest WWE name currently attached to this show.
Oh, he's concurrently working feuds with Vikingo and Penta and AJ Styles. So they're relying on him for a lot, and he is working his ass off. Like, okay. Scariness aside, I thought this match was fucking awesome. These Money in the Bank three ways, I think, have all been awesome. This was obviously the most Lucha inspired one of all of them because of Gable's feuds and also in promotion of Worlds Collide. And if this is any sort of indication of like the type of style that they want to employ for a WWE owned AAA, I'm very excited. I think this would be a style that would translate very well to a North American audience. Great pace of action, and just that tope from Dragon Lee was insane. So I had a lot of fun watching it. But yeah, I hope Gable is okay.
I'm really looking forward to this Worlds Collide show. And the Cubs fan at Lucha Blog brought this up today. And it's a great point is, like, they've announced, like, on YouTube, it will be both in Spanish and English, and they better have, like, the right English commentary team, because, bad commentary for Lucha can be a killer, and I don't know who they, like, are they going to take WWE broadcasters for this? Like, I think you need that Lucha expert there for a lot of these characters and to explain a lot of this stuff, so I think the commentary is very key aspect to this presentation.
Yeah, that's a good one. Something to bring up. I like on their roster, who do you think would be most capable? Because I definitely see them hiring a play-by-play guy from within, just maybe for a bit of a familiarity aspect to it.
Like someone from WWE or someone from outside?
WWE. Like, you think of Vic Joseph would be good for something like this.
I don't know, like, how much, like, Lucha he follows. I don't know. That's who I would want.
Could you see Cole doing it?
Dude's got to do Money in the Bank. I would not be spreading these guys thin to do double the shows.
Probably not.
For that. I mean, honestly, like, a Joe Dombrowski that does do, like, he would be great, but WWE might want one of their own people, and yeah, Corey Graves, I could see very well being put on this. They should have his brother on it, to be honest. Like, maybe you just have that. Corey Graves and Sam Adonis, and they don't acknowledge that they're brothers calling this. Mm-hmm. Graves, you're back to play-by-play tonight.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Judgment Day is with Roxanne Perez, who brings in nuggets for Dominic and starts rubbing his shoulder when Liv Morgan returns from her filming duties in Japan. And she states that Raquel has kept me up to date on what's been going on. I'll have something to say about this, but first I need to get a qualifying match for Money in the Bank, which she never ended up getting tonight.
Maybe she's trying to get it next week.
Maybe. Cole and Pat go over, they acknowledge Memorial Day, and we had a video that was voiced by Cody Rhodes. Rusev and Akira Tozawa, this was a, like, multiple-week build for a 55-second match where Tozawa got in some offense, Rusev had enough of this, Machka kick, accolade, and murdered him, until Sheamus came out, and they had a long stare-down, and Rusev backed off.
Yeah, yeah. They kind of teased the interaction last week with Sheamus interacting with the, Alpha Academy. I think we suspected this to be the direction that they'd go, and I think the audience from week one seemed to really see it as a big deal, you know? Rusev has been, integrated through the Alpha Academy, and I think at this point it's been fine for an introduction. We're ready to move on to the main course, and in this case, it's a big plate of meat. So I think we're all ready for this.
Kathy Kelly is with the returning Burt Kreischer, who has brought along Tom Segura to promote their special. And Kelly notes to Tom Segura, "You've been critical of WWE in the past." He says, "Yeah, I've said stupid things in the past."
Do you know what this is in reference to?
I have no idea, nor do I have absolutely any care in the world about Tom Segura's comments on pro wrestling. Burt Kreischer gets distracted and runs off camera to find the War Raiders, and he takes his shirt off. My eyes were not ready to go from Sheamus to Burt Kreischer, who apparently does not believe in sunscreen, because this guy looked like he had been out on the beach for a week.
I don't know if that was like a sunburn or if he was just screaming so much that, like, his face became that red.
Well, his entire body became red. So that's high blood pressure then.
Yeah. Man, I don't know what it is about these sort of Netflix comedian integrations, but like between this and what was that guy, Tony Hinchcliffe? None of these comedians have come across funny in any of these segments. Like these are, these are
professional comedians that like do podcasting. And it's like these segments are these comedians in their worst light. It is the worst promotion for these specials. And I would imagine like fans of Tom Segura and Burt Kreischer would be like, I guess this is kind of true to form for Burt Kreischer, but
well, they're both at once, like they feel overly scripted for what I would assume, you know, comedians that are very good, just kind of, maybe just improvising, and also incredibly, I would say restrictive in terms of like how much of their actual personality they may be able to show. Anyway, these skits that they have penned for them are just so awful. It has me just wanting to completely avoid whatever comedy special they're trying to sell.
Sami Zayn's in the locker room with Jey Uso. He can't stand hearing Rollins and Heyman talk. Jey says, "You got to pick your battles. I've got your back. You got to go out there and win Money in the Bank." I don't know why Jey would be rooting for this. Like this would not be advantageous for him, would it?
Well, he's saying like, number one, he wants his friend to do well. Okay, number two, I guess maybe he doesn't want Seth Rollins to have Money in the Bank. So, at least that's part of the reason. But primarily because I think he wants his friend to do well. I would assume.
I'd take that as a slight if I was Sami Zayn. It's like, oh, okay. Your belt is a no threat if I win this briefcase.
I wish that we could have explored it further.
In case you forgot about them, Bert Kreischer and Tom Segura have now made their way to their seats, and they chug beers before this tag title match, which pits the New Day.
Haha, uh-huh, so funny. You
yeah,
gotta
it's
watch
beer way. They drank it all at once.
Special.
Yeah, I wish that I could watch an hour and a half
of
this. Oh
my goodness, so funny.
The New Day, the War Raiders, and the Creeds, they're fighting before the bell, and then the New Day and the Creeds work together, including them posing together after sending Ivar and Eric to the floor. Julius does his leap to the top for a superplex. Woods is off with a limit break elbow and an Ivar with a top rope splash. Cover gets broken up, and then it's Ivar with a running splash to Kofi at the side of the ring into the LED screen, which starts short-circuiting after this maneuver, and Julius hits this incredible looking flying knee to stop Ivar on the top turnbuckle, but Xavier, who's been working with these guys the whole match, capitalizes, rolling up Julius and grabbing the tights in 9:13. So the Creeds looked like morons and the New Day retained.
Mm-hmm. Overall, I thought it was a strong showcase for the Raw tag division, which has been severely
lacking.
Well,
this was all
lacking.
Of the tag division on yeah. on display.
Yeah, yeah. I think the SmackDown Tag Division obviously has been doing incredibly well in recent weeks, especially with Fraxium. And I think it's made the Raw Tag Division be that much more of a glaring sort of weakness in the sort of WWE. So it seems like they're at least putting effort into it. And I think they're realizing that the key to promoting these tag team divisions is to let these guys wrestle and put on strong matches, you know. And I thought you at least like got the semblance of a really strong core here in these three teams, especially with Ivar. A lot of spots built around him to showcase like his what makes him special, you know, being a big guy, being a Bert Kreischer who could fly. So they have the talent. Let's see who else they can add to this.
Being the one that has the musical ear of our duo, Fraxium introduced their new theme song on Friday.
Neil brought it up, and I guess I didn't even notice that much upon first listen. I went back to listen to it. It is awful. It is so bad. I would have been way more offended by this than like whatever Mina Shirakawa song was played. But man, it's like the most generic. Okay, so it's a thing now that like people do where like Def Rebel is made fun of so much. People make Def Rebel parodies and it's hilarious because they're just like, it's just like the most generic note, like notes, guitar music, and just like a dude's catchphrase over top. And that's kind of what the song sounded like. Like the rhyming, I don't even want to listen to it on Friday if you get the chance. It is like atrocious.
Do you think Paul Levesque should have made a concerted switch midway through the match?
I don't know if what they had before was that much better, but yeah, this is so bad. It's actively like noticeable.
Raquel and Liv run into Io Sky and Kairi Sane. And this is the only time we saw Io on this show, and they mock damage control of what's left of them. And Liv says she's going to win the briefcase and then cash in on Io. And Kairi issues a challenge to her for tonight, and Liv agrees. So that's that. Mm-hmm. Jey Uso comes out, and he is met by Gunther, who congratulates Jey on the 15-year jubilee of the Usos in WWE. I am never going to use the word anniversary ever again now.
Jubilee. Is that interchangeable with anniversary?
Yes. Okay. I would take Gunther at his word here. He says, "You have held this title longer than I ever would have expected." He's had it a month. He says, "You are always there when your friends need you. And those are great qualities for a friend, but terrible ones for a champion. But you don't know any better because this position doesn't come naturally to you." The condescension and the smugness of Gunther, it's a real skill that this man has. Mm-hmm. Like he's just so he's just so good at talking down to Jey and doing it in such a like unforced way, but it just comes out of him so naturally.
Amazing. Yeah.
Gunther says how you don't help other people with their problems when you're champion. When I was champion, I only cared about myself. But Jey, I don't think you have the intellect to understand how to carry yourself as a champion. I will relieve you of your position in 2 weeks and then do what's right, getting the title back on me. And Jey just says, "I'm done. I'm done with people saying my days as champion are numbered. I'm tired of people using this title as an excuse to turn on those that help bring them up and says, what you're fighting for, Gunther, is less than what I am. I'm fighting for these people, and I will make you tap out again.
Mm-hmm. By this point, I think Jay and Gunther have built up a pretty good chemistry on the microphone. You know, Gunther like comes out, gets into like his big list of insults attacking Jay's confidence. And Jay, by this point, has heard enough of this so that he could just like do the quick, like walk away. You're done, you know, and just is able to get the crowd on his side so effortlessly. I think we sound a bit like a broken record, but Gunther is just so fantastic and might honestly be my favorite promo on Raw. And that means I rank him now above a Paul Heyman. And I think for me, a lot of that comes down to freshness as well. Like, great qualities for a human being, terrible qualities for a champion. I think that's just awesome. He's a very classic heel promo. Jay, though, is entirely different. There's nothing classic at all about the way he speaks. I find his style of speaking, there's nothing textbook about it. It's not like you could teach his promo style in a promo class, for instance. It's just completely unique to him, but it somehow works incredibly well for his connection to the audience, and I find that very fascinating. So it is like a bit of a repetitive feud by this point, but we also only have one more week to go before we get to that rematch.
Should they've asked Jey Uso to deliver that video on Friday about the WrestleMania location switch?
I think he would have come across a lot better than Paul Levesque. Yeah.
New Orleans, two words, one new location, Las Vegas. Live more. First, we had Cody Rhodes is launching a podcast this week presented by alcohol, and his first guest is Brandy, his wife, not the drink. Oh. And they showed a clip of his return in 2022 where Cody thought he might get booed when he returned. And Brandy was like, that's not going to happen. And it did not. No.
Really, really gunning for the Apple top 10 pro wrestling charts. So
how many shots of American Wheatley vodka will it take before they start to get into the Dan Lambert segment that Brandy was part of?
Oh, I don't know. I wonder. Yeah. Or who's the black belt?
The black belt.
Yeah, remember her infamous black belt promo? Do you have a black belt?
Oh,
who's the black belt? Was it Shafir? It doesn't matter. I want a full breakdown on this podcast about Brandy's best AEW moments.
Well, maybe we'll get into it. I don't know how long this podcast is, but it debuts on Wednesday. They didn't say what time on Wednesday. I wonder if they could debut it at 8 o'clock Eastern.
I don't know if that's really the same counter-programming competition.
It depends what the content is.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay, anyway.
We had three nights in Tampa. So that meant Titus O'Neil was shown in the crowd. Terry didn't make it to any nights in Tampa.
He had
three weddings to get to on consecutive nights, and he couldn't make it.
Weddings. Yeah.
He should have gone to Battleground. That should have been his where he goes.
Battleground.
Would that be the safest audience for Terry? Or would they,
I don't know.
Would they all be tough?
That.
Yeah.
I really don't know about that.
So, right after we talked about Ron DeSantis being at Saturday Night's Main Event, like hours later, Hogan posts a picture with Ron DeSantis and they're holding up his All-American beer. And I'm just wondering, like, when was this photo taken? Like, it could have been anywhere in Tampa. Hmm. But given it was just a few hours after Ron DeSantis was there at Saturday Night's Main Event, it was like, was Hogan like, this is his hometown of Tampa. It just made me wonder, like, it was kind of pretty noteworthy that you do, forget NXT, but two main roster shows in Tampa and like not a whiff of Hogan on these shows.
Huh. Very interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Liv Morgan against Kairi Sane. So Sane misses Liv and kicks the post and then takes a sunset bomb to the floor. They go through the break. Liv goes for the three amigos and Sane stops on the final one. Liv is fighting back, hits a code breaker off the turnbuckle for a near fall. Oblivion gets blocked. And then after a backstabber, Sane catches her in the corner and is going to go for an Alabama slam, but they just like collapse with Sane landing on top of her. And you weren't exactly sure what this was supposed to be, but then they go to the next corner and Kairi just lifts her up and hits an Alabama slam. I was like, okay, that's exactly
that,
what they were going for. That
looked pretty awful even when it was actually
well executed. And you even had Michael Cole saying she didn't even get all of that one either. This was some rough looking offense from Kairi. Back to back, Kairi does hit this Alabama slam somewhat, and then Roxanne Perez shows up and sends Kairi off the top turnbuckle behind the referee's back. So Raquel comes over and browbeats Perez, and Liv is distracted by this, goes for the Oblivion, and Kairi turns it into a roll up, pinning Liv in 10 minutes and 51 seconds. So Liv loses in her return.
Yeah, she does. Yeah. Match definitely got a little messy by the end. I was enjoying most of it, though, you know, a bit more physical than I was expecting from these two. Surprising result, maybe on paper, but it makes sense given the story of what seems to be Roxanne Perez infiltrating Judgment Day on behalf of Finn Balor in order to break up Dom and Liv Morgan. So beyond that, you also potentially set up a tag team title match between Liv and Raquel versus Kairi and Io coming off of this as well. So all the pieces seem to be in place.
We had a video for Rhea Ripley, who states that mommy is always on top. It's not just a saying, but a way of life for me. I was like, I always just thought that was a double entendre. I didn't know this was like your life's code. Mommy on top.
Okay. All right.
Then she notes, this is the first ladder match of her career. I'm like, how has she never been in one of these Money in the Bank matches?
Yeah, kind of.
That's
shocking.
Crazy.
Or even in NXT, you're telling me, like, you know.
Yeah, like not even Money in the Bank. Like, no ladder match, period. Like, I couldn't believe this. So she says, no one is safe from Mommy in the Bank.
Your favorite, John.
I love it. Yeah.
You got a name that starts with the letter M? Oh, you're in the match.
Then we had the American Made segment where Gable's forehead just is busted open. I mean, he's going to have, like, quite the lump on his forehead tomorrow is my guess here. Vikingo is back there. Didn't apologize. And he says beating you at Worlds Collide will be like taking candy from El Hijo. And I laughed out loud at this line. Vikingo, he didn't even seem to know what Chad Gable was saying. And then he just walked off as Gable continued. Gable turns around and he gets decked in the head by AJ Styles, who warns him that if you or that coffee bean ever interfere in one of my matches, I'll put you through the concrete, all right? You or that coffee bean, which I don't know how offensive that term is to describe a Mexican, but let's assume AJ Styles is up on proper descriptions of different nationalities.
Yeah, or I think AJ is operating under the assumption that the person under the mask is not a Mexican, I would hope.
So Chad Gable is a coffee bean.
Well, Cafe Americano.
I guess coffee bean is better than like Mexican jumping bean, which was absolutely racist back when that used to be the description.
Yes. Yeah.
Jesse Ventura loved that one.
Brian telling us that the segment actually didn't air for all audiences and was actually in commercial break.
I assume this one was a commercial break spot, but it was actually like kind of like kind of usually important. These commercial segments are just like it's just random promos with not too much storyline consequence to it, but I mean this Chad Gable has like a million irons in the fire at the moment, and I would think we're probably going to get a TV match with Gable and AJ at some point, but he's got a lot going on. Judgment Day react to Liv's loss, and Raquel is, first of all, Dominic is explaining how the time zone difference and all that, and this is the time when we could have had Hogan's segment, where he explains time zones in Japan to Dominic.
Yes.
That could have been great.
Of course.
So Raquel blames Roxanne Perez, and Liv, assessing the situation, says, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Raquel, you were the veteran out there. You should have known better. And Liv storms off. Raquel is stunned, and Balor is just on top of the world, that he's just messing with everybody here. And yeah, so we have Liv siding with Roxanne over Raquel here.
Or just an attempt to create a bit of tension between now Liv and Raquel. I mean, Finn Balor wants to get those two out of the group, I would assume, and Dom by extension. And
well, we better be careful, because this is the entire women's tag division.
Well, I'm just happy that for Raquel, she's actually getting something, like an actual storyline of substance, actually getting some sort of focus beyond just kind of being the background player next to Liv Morgan here. The ability to at least tell us some sort of tension story. And I think coming off of this, we are to predict, like, what is the end result for all of this for the Judgment Day? Who are the ones that are actually going to be defecting from the group? Will Roxanne and Raquel end up being somehow a new team together with Liv Morgan potentially a babyface? It's kind of interesting to think about now.
Lyra comes out. They have announced a rematch for the IC title at Money in the Bank with Lyra and Becky Lynch. And Lyra says, I wish I was out here to talk about new competition, but Becky talked herself into a rematch. I have nothing left to prove against her. I've beaten her twice, but I didn't feel satisfied after beating Becky because she showed up on Raw with no shame or embarrassment after losing, which technically Becky could just continue into forever and just continue to get rematches. If she doesn't sell the defeat, I guess Lyra will never be satisfied.
If she continues to be annoyed enough, yeah.
Yeah. The Toronto Maple Leafs should take this tact. They should have had a parade this year.
They're not even in the playoffs, John. Cut them some slack. Come on.
Okay. Lyra says that Becky is like a rat with a piece of cheese, and I couldn't let her do that. But now it's personal, and I'm going to hurt her at Money in the Bank. So Becky comes out and says, you might have won some silly wrestling match, but I won the night because I went home with my hot husband and you went to the hospital with your weird fiance. Becky says, I'm the best thing to ever happen to you and that title. Lyra says, they're only talking about me and this title. They said they're talking about you because I keep beating you. So Becky says, since I raised your arm in NXT when you beat me, if I face you again and lose, I will never challenge for that Intercontinental title again. But if
not against Lyra, not period, but just only against Lyra.
Oh, okay. What a stipulation. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So if I lose a third time, I don't get a fourth match.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. And if I win, Lyra has to raise Becky's arm.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. I think that everyone's reaction echoed this woman in the front row that was not exactly enamored with this stipulation being announced. But these two had a hell of a match at Backlash, so I'm not complaining that we're getting another match between these two. But I mean, if ever we have telegraphed a title change, it's this one. I just can't fathom they beat Becky again, but
I can't either. I mean, overall, I thought a strong segment. You know, Lyra, I think, is doing a good job. Again, she's not somebody with, I would say, a natural charisma about her at all, but it really feels like the practice and hard work in her public speaking has been put in. And I thought she came across really well. I continue to be pretty impressed by her. And I think with enough repetition and enough exposure in front of these crowds through a high caliber program, like against a Becky Lynch, hopefully she'll get there. At the same time, she's not going to be winning this match. So I hope she even gets a chance to stay in the spotlight beyond losing the championship.
Is LJ Cleary going to be at Money in the Bank and he'll be identified as weird fiance?
Clearly. I mean, they keep bringing him up, that I mean, they did show us this last time. So I have to think that he's got a role. going forward, or at least
I don't think we're getting a couples tag though.
No, I don't think we're getting that one. No.
Sami Zayn is on his way to the ring, and who comes out of door number one? It is the returning Karrion Kross, who reminds Sami, you could have gone to SmackDown and received the title match, but you had to do it your way. Which, I mean, by this point, I mean, it is looking like Sami really did blow a much better option on the table. So Kross says, you know you're never going to win the title, right? And Zayn warns him, I'll deal with you later. And Karrion's just thinking, I've got nothing but time.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm here every Monday, and I have an open agenda. Yeah. Anytime you want to chat.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, Kross's role is really just to play like the devil on your shoulder, right? And I think he is a really
cut one big promo every year after WrestleMania and get it
not on
buzzing.
TV. Yes. Yeah, not on TV.
Yeah. Go and explain it on Ariel Helwani's show for an hour.
But I think like right now in Sami Zayn's like trajectory of what we can assume to be his story, I think he's the perfect device to introduce back into Zayn's life because, like even though Zayn hasn't really vocalized it in his promos, we can assume that he's going through some sort of internal struggle after being slighted for so much of this past year. But we also get the sense that he's been bottling it all up inside and not trying to sell it whatsoever. So to have Kross be the one to potentially like continue to like mentally torture him to like drive it out of him.
He's the subtext of like the story that you are supposed to be following with Sami. And if he does end up doing this long-term turn, I could very well see like Kross being intertwined here with Sami at some point.
So remember, like Karrion Kross, according to his own logic, and maybe there's something to it now, he's batting 1,000, okay, with these sort of feuds that he's had. Right,
but and he hasn't even had a match with this guy. Like people he talks to.
He doesn't have matches with anybody. Did he have a match with the New Day? Well, maybe he did, but like he somehow takes responsibility for Nakamura turning for was it the New Day turning? Name any other number of people that he's feuded with, and I think he will ultimately succeed in aiding Sami Zayn to turn to the dark side as well. I'm on board for the story. I think Zayn continues to be the most interesting character that I think is on the show right now. And we've only just like started, you know, this whatever's going on here. So these sort of repetitions about like, you're never going to be champion. Also, like they do work in assuring me that I think they will have Sami Zayn become champion. But I just think it'll have to come via a heel turn.
Then they ran down the World's Collide card, and I don't know if Alberto was watching, but he would have learned of probably what is going to be Sunday's outcome when he defends this title. We will see, or we got some high-level 4D chess by the WWE graphics department.
Could be a three-way. Alberto, El Patron in the main event of World's Collide.
Yeah, I'm sure that will be met with no outrage at all. Seth Rollins, Sami Zayn, and Finn Balor in our main event qualifier for Money in the Bank. Early on, Zayn does an Arabian moonsault and points to the sky as his tribute to Sabu, which is interesting because we did have like Heyman as well at ringside here,
who has not said anything
about Sabu's passing. Like, can't really do it in this character on the show, but even like just separately, he's like, I don't think he's done any interviews that I've seen where he's like, it's been asked or anything about him, but he was, we'll be talking a lot about, Sabu and his manager, Paulie Dangerously in 1994 on Rewind Away this week. Balor hits a superplex onto Zayn and Rollins follows with a splash. They had a lot of time for this match. This is pretty much the last half hour of the show. Rollins tries to work with Balor. Zayn stops a pedigree, but later Rollins hits it. Zayn kicks out, hits a Blue Thunder Bomb, and man, did this crowd believe that this was going to be the time that Sami Zayn wins with the Blue Thunder Bomb. Hits an Exploder, goes for the Huluva, but Balor cuts it off with a Sling Blade, and Balor does the Shotgun Dropkick, sending Zayn into Rollins, misses the Coup de Grace, and with it is hit with the Stomp. Rollins then takes the Huluva Kick, and Zayn goes for the cover when Braun Breaker yanks out Zayn, and him and Reed beat down Zayn. When Jay hops the barricade, he attacks them with super kicks until a spear puts down Jay, and Zayn gets involved, so he leaves the ring as Dominic appears, throws a chair into the center of the ring, And Cole notes that wasn't a great throw, as it's like in between Balor and Rollins. So as Balor is crawling towards the chair to grab it, he gets stomped on the chair by Rollins, and Rollins pins Balor to qualify. For what they're doing with Balor and Dominic, I really do enjoy these little like subtleties of like Balor being too slow to help Dominic, and then the chair spot here. A lot of run-ins to this one, which, I mean, it's kind of par for the course given where they were going here. But you do get Rollins, so it's a pretty major name in the ladder match for June 7th.
Yeah, I mean, the role of a match like this is to build to other stories, right? And the way they like to do that is by involving other people in the finish of these matches, which I was perfectly fine with in this instance. I thought in terms of the in-ring content, when we did get just a clean match, I thought it was an outstanding match here. They made Zayn look like a very sympathetic figure going up against these two heels. And, you know, you can tell the crowd, I think, is really on board with a Sami Zayn title story by this point. So I think they've been successful in putting him in that sort of spotlight. Yeah, a lot of really strong characters right now in the top mix on Raw, you know, between Seth Rollins' faction and just on the babyface side of things. For now, Sami Zayn, Jey Uso, CM Punk, you know, like I think they drew these sort of enemy lines pretty clearly here with Rollins' group and the people that are going to be opposing him.
The match goes 19 minutes and 37 seconds, and my only disappointment was... You laid out a great scenario of Zayn in this Money in the Bank match, which doesn't completely. I guess they still have three spots left. I mean, you are kind of doing this story with Zayn, where him coming up short is kind of part of that story as well. But the final portion of the show was CM Punk's music playing, and Braun and Braun run to the entrance, and you know what that means. CM Punk coming through the back door, through the crowd, and hits Rollins with a GTS, and then hightails it through the crowd. And if you were watching the end here, this is when they should have hit bodies for this image. It was Braun Breaker that was the one that was really like on the turnbuckle and signaling towards Punk. Which my thought would have been that Bronson would have, like, he did the attack. He was also, like, in storyline, it was like he, like, Punk kind of gets credit for the injury in War Games. But the way this ended made you almost think that it would be Punk with Braun Breaker at some point.
He might be getting both of them eventually, you know, in succession, right?
We could be also getting a tag as well. Like, if you have Punk and Zayn together against Braun and Bronson, like, that's possible too. And
six-man with all six of them?
I guess it just is a matter. If you do it at Money in the Bank, Rollins is in the ladder match. But if you punt it past that, yeah, you could do the six-man with Jay.
Well, Money in the Bank, we're already up to four matches. Between the two ladder matches, we got Lyra and Becky and, what's the last one here?
The tag with Cena and...
Yes. Cody,
Cena, and Logan Paul. So yeah, you do have the four matches. I would think like you'd want Punk on that show, but yeah, we will see. There you go. That was Raw. So overall, your thoughts on the show, Way?
I thought it was a satisfying show. You know, for focus put towards Money in the Bank. I think this was very much about establishing Bronson Reed as part of Seth Rollins' stable and just this sort of the strength that the stable has right now. I continue to enjoy what little they're doing with Sami Zayn in a very sort of like slow pace. I thought the Lyra and Becky segment came across well, and a lot of exposure for Roxanne Perez in Judgment Day as well.
I hope Chad Gable is in one piece by the time we next speak, because I mean, he had a rough night, so hopefully, and we were talking about like stuff to the neck and head on top of it, so hopefully he's okay.
I see them doing the double duty thing for him on Worlds Collide. I mean, they're just like, they have to do something with Penta on the show, and I don't know what Penta would be doing other than something with
It's interesting because Penta's now in the ladder match as well. Like, does he end up working both shows that day as well? Like, I don't know how much they want like their talent having to do multiple matches that day, especially when one of them's a ladder match.
It's very true. I mean, maybe I'm basing too much on this poster, but you know what, interestingly, I thought Penta was on. He is not on the poster, so I guess maybe he won't be involved.
Well, it's going to be a very lengthy day of wrestling. You know, this so this starts at 3 o'clock Eastern. Money in the Bank is at 7. So I'm imagining this one's going to probably go like your NXT level, like 2.5 to 3 hours. And then, boom, you have like a one-hour turnaround until Money in the Bank. So, and there's probably a collision that night too, isn't there? Wow. Lots of wrestling.
This is our life.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's a lot of it. All right, we're going to say goodbye to everyone on the YouTube channel, but hit subscribe, like the video, and you can check out on this channel now the interview that I did with Muhammad Hassan, and you can go back, catch up on the weekend. If you don't have time to watch all this wrestling, you definitely have time to listen to us talk about this wrestling that we have watched. We have a review of Saturday night's main event, NXT Battleground, and AEW Double or Nothing. I mean, man, we had a fire hose this past week just sending out these shows to everyone.
We watch everything. We talk about it. We help you guys digest them and analyze the shows. So hope you guys enjoyed some of these podcasts. At the very least, we welcome any sort of comments you want to leave or whatever you want to say.
And also, later this week, postwrestlingcafe.com, we will have Rewind Away. We're already way at number 183 as we are going to be chatting ECW, the night the line was crossed. From the ECW arena. You know, ECW, it does have a legacy where you would think it was the show would have been called The Night the Line Was Sniffed, but this was The Night the Line Was Crossed.
And sniff? Oh. I just got it. Oh,
listen, my. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn with this locker room, but we are going to be chatting about a pretty legendary match in ECW's lore with Terry Funk, Shane Douglas, and Sabu in the three-way dance. And it's not like your typical setup of a three-way dance where they just all start at the same time. So we'll talk about that whole thing, the lead up to this show where Paul Heyman has been booking since October. And this is Terry Funk we will be discussing quite a lot because, spoiler, he is incredible in this era of ECW. And as much as people focus on like Barely Legal and that period of Terry Funk in ECW, he was adding so much credibility to this company when it's still Eastern Championship Wrestling when we're talking about this event. Like they do the rebrand until the summer when Douglas throws down the NWA title. And you're going to see like a totally different version of the Sandman, a completely different version of Taz as the Tazmaniac, and wrestling on this show. And I use that in the loosest of quotations, the original Sheik, Ed Farhat. I mean, this show has something for everyone. And guys, 2 hours. Okay.
Oh, so
music to Way's ears. Okay. As he can easily pull this off on his next all nighter. All right. Goodbye on the YouTube channel. Hang on in the cafe. Because now it is time to take us over to forum.postwrestling.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand. Through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.